other day, he came to the world and
so we are finally back to discuss another Animorphs book after a very long hiatus, which was entirely my fault. I'll just go ahead and take that one on me. So we last left off with the Hork-Bajir Chronicles, and we are jumping back into the narratives of our kids, which honestly, like, I mean, I love all the chronicles, but I'm so much more inclined to read the narratives of our kids instead. It's much easier for me to sit down and get through one of them. Although the fact that they're like always 100 pages shorter is probably more helpful as well.
Yeah. It took me like an hour.
Yeah.
Tops to read this.
Yeah.
Especially since you can often cut out a lot of it.
Yeah.
Which is not to say that the morphing scenes aren't interesting and fun to read, but they're not entirely necessary.
No.
Because we've seen Rick morph into a hawk before.
Yes.
Or an eagle, sorry.
But this book was interesting in that it kind of had, like, three different things going on, and was very, like, introspective and kind of symbolic and, there was one thing that was, like, an actual plot. Actually, there were two things that were actual plots. I'll give it that. The main plot of which was that, this is a Tobias book, it bears stating, and Tobias found out that there was some lady who was claiming to be his cousin, kind of, like, snooping after him, telling him that, like, or telling lawyers, and then the lawyers telling Tobias that they had, a message from his father, his real father, and that there was this cousin named Aria who was previously in Africa taking pictures of wildlife, apparently, wanted to come into his life and maybe, you know, whisk him away and give him a family, more or less. And of course, this raises the question, A, is this a crock of bull? B, is this a trap? Or C, is this a chance for Tobias to have a happy family? And in order to do that, does Tobias, he has a choice to make because he's also a hawk right now. So a lot of Tobias identity crisis stuff going through the book. Second storyline was the Hork-Bajir colony. One of the little baby Hork-Bajir, a little chap named Beck, walked away. He just wandered off.
Yeah, kid. Like, what? Come on, guys. Keep your children under control. This is not like, you know, you lose your kid at Walmart. This is not Hork-Bajir. You'd think they would have better, I don't know, better whatever.
But anyway, so Beck wandered away, and they needed to try and track down this wee little Hork-Bajir. And then the third storyline was sort of underneath both of them was this sort of identity crisis that Tobias is having, where every time he goes in for a kill, he experiences life as like experiences things from the side of the prey as opposed to the predator, which makes him sort of like pull up and not kill rabbits because it freaks him out. And so he's going hungry, basically. And it's really embarrassing for him because he doesn't want to kill these little cute baby rabbits, and he's got another hawk on his turf. And so he kind of is like, well, I'll try and find fresh roadkill, but that's, like, really embarrassing, especially when, like, Rachel saw him. And there's a lot in this book I don't really remember. I feel like in the, like, he likes me universe of Animorphs romance, that, like, Jake and Cassie are pretty, like, that's the level they're at. It's just, like, he likes me. And Tobias and Rachel, I thought, were at that point, sort of, like, more or less. But this book is, like, this book could also be called, like, the ways in which Tobias is obsessed with Rachel and loves her so, so much, like, all the time.
Yeah, it kind of, like, they dialed it up reasonably quickly, I think. Like, I don't remember this necessarily being established, like, on the surface previously. But then, like, by the end, Rachel's, like, making comparisons to Romeo and Juliet. And I'm like, oh, okay,
she just,
so we're going there.
Yeah, she just totally lays it out there and is like, you know, Tobias, if you stay a hawk, we can't hold hands. And I was like, I didn't realize that was on the table. I thought we were still in like-like stage right now. I mean, Romeo and Juliet like-liked each other.
I feel like that's how Rachel would play it, though. She would be like,
yeah, just lay it on the table.
And I'm human and you're not.
Yeah, that's why, I mean, that's the thing about this, like, from Tobias's perspective, anytime that he was just like, I love Rachel so much, I was just like, me too, Tobias, me too.
Yeah, it's pretty easy to sympathize with him here.
Yeah. especially when I laugh so hard when they go, I'm gonna get ahead of myself and plot, but they go to, like, ransack that, like, terrible animal place, and she's like, did Jake say knock down one wall or all the walls? Like, all the walls, or Angel, just take them all out.
Oh, bless her.
She's the best. The plot was such that, really the thing that took precedence was trying to get the Hork-Bajir back. But weirdly enough, that storyline sort of dovetailed with Tobias's storyline with Arya, because they found Beck in this really crappy, awful, like, zoo, quote-unquote, use that term loosely, just, like, terrible place where they put animals in cages.
There are a lot of these in our home state.
So, and so they discovered that, you know, some place was claiming to have, like, an alien, like, the first alien. Yeah, and it was, like, Beck in a cage. So they ransack the place, and Tobias is in charge of getting Beck out of there, but Tobias loses track of Beck, and, of course, the Yerks come right then, because they also have realized that there's a Hork-Bajir in, like, what's essentially, like, a circus act. And so, probably with less juggling, though. And so, there's, of course, a skirmish, and Beck gets captured by the Yerks, and it's just like, ah, crap, now we have to, like, try and get him back again, and this time from, like, definitely more dangerous people, who know who he is and who, when, like, we are. And there was a weird thing where, like, Arya came to that place to, like...
I mean, since spoilers, Arya is not, you know, Bias's cousin. Sister 3. I guess we should talk about that. I assume that was because, like, she went to see if it was actually a work leader or, like, something else that's not human.
Right.
And that the Yerks wouldn't necessarily want humans to know about or have or whatever. But, and that's an okay way of doing it if you have a human war, like, who happens to be a wildlife photographer.
That is true.
It's a pretty good cover.
Well, so that's the thing is, Axe and Tobias, you know, sort of stalk Arya for a day or two to see if she's a controller, and she doesn't ever leave to go to a yurt pool. And she saves a little kid in the street, and Tobias is pretty convinced that, you know, she's on the up and up. And even goes so far as to kind of make the decision that he would like to morph human and be human and have an opportunity to live kind of a non-hawk lifestyle, especially because his hawk lifestyle is, like, really getting him down lately, and the fact that he's starving. And so, but what ends up happening, though, is it's revealed that Arya is, in fact, Visser 3, because when they're like, besieging the secret weapon place. There's, like, it kind of reminded me a little bit of that Buffy episode, the one where it's, like, Xander-centric and all of the action is, like, going on the side, and Xander's like, whoop, like, and, like, yes, that one, thank you. It reminded me a little bit of that, because, like, there was definitely a showdown at this place where, like, the Hork-Bajir were like, there's a weapon there, we need to destroy it, and, like, Toby's gonna come in with more Hork-Bajir and, like, save everybody's butts, and, like, everybody's gonna fight, and Tobias was, like, laying in the dirt going, like, I hate myself. That's so awful.
I don't want to say that Tobias and Xander are Danaverse, because that's not true. In this case, it is an accurate comparison. because, you know, we find out that the Hork-Bajir, like, you know, they raid, basically, your compounds, and, like, they are, or they're, you know, they're like gorillas. Not Marco, gorillas, like gorilla fighters. So it's like, there's all this other action going on, and Tobias, like, is aware of it, and it's, like, tangential, but it's tangential to what he's actually thinking about and, like, doing, which is making tough decisions.
Well, because he finds
really
out...
to help with his friends, because he refuses to talk to anyone.
Well, the fact is...
I sympathize with.
The fact is that Arya is Visser 3, and he learns that when he sees Arya in a helicopter, basically, like, swooping in to, you know... manage this, like, Hork-Bajir breakout situation. And so that tips Tobias off, and so he realizes that it was all a lie, and he feels very foolish for thinking, you know, or wanting to be human, and then also feels really sad at having the prospect of that yanked away, because he didn't realize how much it meant to him until it was no longer an option anymore. This is a really sad book. And what ends up happening is he goes in, because he basically realizes it's a trap to get his, quote-unquote, you know, have his message from his father read to him. And he goes in and with no other choice but then to, you know, just walk right into it. Because if he doesn't, then the suspicions are raised that he could possibly be connected with the Andalites or whatever. Especially, you know, that Visser III knows that this is Elfangor's son. So there's like a blood connection here. What saves Tobias is that when they're reading what is essentially, as Diana refers to it, the space will.
It should have been a space will. I'm so angry about this. Well, I mean, this is the kind of thing that you expect to come to light in, like, you know, like a Star Wars kind of hologram thing that's hidden inside a droid. Not in a will.
Help me, Tobias.
Human lawyer, like, come on. Elfanger, think ahead. He obviously knew what was happening. He was aware that Earth was being invaded. Like, why would you ever do that?
Well, I got the impression that, like, I don't know, wasn't the Elemist involved somehow? Although it seems very unlikely that the Elemist would also resort to human, like, the human law system.
The Elemist was involved in, like, removing Elfanger from that timeline and, like, making everyone forget about him. But, god damn it, Elfanger, like, really?
He was really committed to his humanity. So, what saves Tobias is they're expecting a reaction out of him. That he's gonna have some sort of emotional reaction to learning that news or whatever. And what is very fortunate is that because Tobias has spent so much time as a hawk, he doesn't really remember to have facial expressions anymore.
He didn't even remember what his birthday was. I almost cried.
This is a really sad book. Tobias's journey in this book is really interesting. And I think, like, there was a part that, like, he has this big revelation in chapter 24. I opened right to it, sort of. He's talking about, it's the classic predator versus prey dilemma, which we've, you know, always sort of liked exploring this or talking about this in the podcast, because it changes. It's a dilemma that's present for everyone, and they all internalize it in a different way. And, you know, you have Marco and Rachel, who are very retaliatory and have very little, like, moral gray area, where it's like, if I get pushed, I will push you back. I don't care who you are. Whereas Tobias and Cassie are more in tune with, you know, harmony in nature and the ethical sort of gray area of, well, it's still violence. Is it right to push back even if you've been provoked? And what are the best options kind of thing? And so Tobias has, this, and I think that's really interesting as well, like, the idea that Tobias becoming a hawk and having this whole, like, predator versus prey dilemma and, you know, being pushed and pushing back is really interesting, sort of in the idea that he was bullied when he was human, that he was constantly sort of, like, prey as a human, and then, you know, he becomes this predator and he can't completely divorce himself from the prey side and the humanity side. And what I liked about the revelation was that he kind of realized that, actually, I'll just read it, because it's good. Get pushed, push back, the only way. No, not the only way. There was another way. Don't push to begin with. It's the aggressors who start the cycle. It's the guy who wakes up in the morning and decides he can't get through the day without finding someone to attack, to insult, to hurt. But where does that leave you? Letting jerks dictate your reactions? Always sinking to the level of whatever creep comes along? My mind went to that other hawk, the one who wanted my territory. There it was, push and push back. But it wasn't a good comparison, was it? That hawk wasn't human. All he had was instinct. Couldn't blame him for doing what was natural. So maybe humans were no better. Maybe you couldn't blame a human animal for just being an animal. Except that my hawk opponent had no choice, no free will. He'd never heard, blessed are the peacemakers, or I have a dream, or all men are created equal. It suddenly occurred to me right then, for the first time, that what I thought was so unique about me, that I was half instinctive predator and half human being, wasn't so unique after all. Every human, Jake, Rachel, Marco, Cassie, all humans, kind of lives on that edge between savage and saint. And the thing is that sometimes when you get pushed, you do have to push back, and other times you do have to turn the other cheek. Which I don't know, I liked that, especially because, like, Tobias is always so, like, alienated, no pun intended. And so I really liked that was in there when, you know, he's torn between these two worlds, and in this one he has the opportunity to maybe become completely human, and that's sort of torn away from him. He doesn't have a choice there anymore. And I really liked that part was in there to sort of unify him with his real family, the Animorphs.
Yeah, come on, guy. Like, found families are just as good as the blood ones. And in this case, better, because his aunt and uncle are apparently dicks, so.
Exactly. And his dad writes space wills.
His dad didn't write a space will. That's the problem. His dad wrote a human will. I feel like he wouldn't have done that.
Well, and I think what's interesting about that information coming to light to Tobias in this book as well is the idea that his dad was half one thing, half another, sort of torn between two worlds, and, you know, chose to be trapped in his human morph, which there's plenty argument that says that Tobias chose to be trapped in his hawk morph. Whether or not he sticks with that decision or would completely back that decision up, or if it was a conscious decision, all left, you know, on the table for discussion. But I think the argument's there. And I think that, yeah, that's interesting that that information comes to him in this book when he's sort of feeling the pressure of being torn between the two worlds. Well, that's the other thing. They kind of had, you know, Tobias and Axe have a little bit of bonding time in this book as well to sort of remind us of the fact that Tobias and Axe do have kind of a special bond based on the fact that they're misfits a little bit. They don't really fit in with their species, and they're sort of adrift in a world where there's no one like them.
Yeah, there's definitely, like, set up and foreshadowing for them to be actually related, I think.
Yeah.
But even if they weren't, they would still be bros.
Exactly. They do get Beck back with the Horcrux. Yes? Okay. I was like, plot happened. How did that go?
I assume. Yeah, they did.
And hopefully those other four, they freed another four, maybe?
Yeah, I think so. Mr. Three is never a nice person, obviously. But he was really pretty nasty of him this time. Like, that is really mean to be like, hey, so, I fingered a kid. His family's all fucked up because of me. Indirectly. But he's still a fingers kid. So I have to find him. And how am I going to do that? Oh, I'm going to pretend to be his family. Like, you asshole.
Well, and as soon as he realized that, like, Tobias, quote-unquote, didn't know anything or whatever, he was like, actually, I have to go back to Africa. Never mind.
And then he calls him, like, street trash. And I'm like,
yes, I felt like, oh, that was so terrible.
Good one.
But it was good, too, like, because, you know, it helped. That piece of news also, like, kind of connected Tobias. It helped him make the choice that he never really got to make. Like, you know, choose human or stay hawk thing. He was about to choose human, and then that choice was off the table for him. And in that it was taken off the table for him, he instead found out who his, you know, his father really is. And that connects him, like, that changes everything. And I think, like, actively makes him choose to be a hawk and stay in the fight and keep with the Animorphs and, you know, saving the planet.
Yeah. I mean, even if it's not an actual... I mean, I guess it's something of a false choice, because he doesn't really...
Yeah, he doesn't really get the choice.
But it's still nice to feel like you know, his perspective changes, and that's really what's important here. Not that he, like, actively says, you know, I'm not going to work to human and stay that way, but...
Yeah. Well, he does, I mean...
I feel like you have that.
I mean, he could still morph to human and stay that way, even without Arya in the picture. And he specifically does morph to human after he finds out that she's Visser 3, he morphs human after the law office, after he finds out that Elfanger is his dad, just so that he can cry. Just so sad. I made myself really sad.
This is a sad book. All of Tobias' books are just totally wrecking.
They are.
Yeah, that was probably my favorite, like, aspect of this, other than Rachel being awesome and Tobias basically hero worshipping her.
Pretty much.
It was another delightful layer of why Visser 3 is a terrible person.
Yeah. I did think it was interesting, though, that he was very, still kind of respectful, I use that word loosely, towards Elfanger. Like, even if maybe he himself doesn't have personal respect for him, he knows that, like, Elfanger is... like, was, like a valuable warrior kind of thing. Like, there's a weird last speech. Yeah, there was, like, a weird level of something called, like, respect. I feel weird using that word, because I don't think it's, like, quite that, like, way, but I can't...
I couldn't tell if he was being sincere or if he was just trying to, like, one more dig. Like, maybe I took the wrong tack here. Maybe if I, like, appeal to this kid's, like, sense of everyone wants to, like, feel pride in their father, right? I feel like he was a cool guy and, like, really admired. But I also do think that Ellerin, like, he didn't like Elfanger, obviously. He thought he was, like, totally weak and stupid. But there's, I mean, it was, I thought it was pretty well established that there was ultimately some kind of, like they were on a level playing ground. And Ellerin recognized that, and Mr. Free recognizes that.
Yeah. That's probably a better way to put it.
Otherwise, he wouldn't have gone so far to kill him. Like,
yeah, well, the acknowledgement that, like, he... It's kind of like the whole doing good and being noble and being nice is not always going to reap the best things for you. I mean, we saw that in the Horcrux Chronicles, definitely. And I mean, that's the whole principle of Ciro's kindness, is that Ciro did a nice thing. It backfired. And so, like, I feel like there, that's sort of why you picked up on the, like, dig part of it, and I picked up on the respect part of it. Because it's the same thing. It's sort of like, you know, Elfanger was a very good Andalite who did, like, good things. That does not mean that those good things are, like, had, like, good repercussions or were smart things. Like, it's sort of that, like, layer where Visser 3 can acknowledge that. It's like, yeah, but that was, you know, he was a dumbo for being so nice or so smart or, like, so noble or whatever. Because, yeah.
Both is good.
Yeah, exactly. K.A. Just layering it on. I guess that's it, really, that we have to talk about number 23, The Pretender. Oh, it's right there in the title. We really should have known. I never pay attention to the titles because either they're really irrelevant.
They're always kind of vague. Yeah. They're not.
But this, yeah, but then this is really not. Not make it all. I don't have the next book with me. I suspect it's Cassie. It's called number 24, The Suspicion. It's with the Helmicrons are in it.
Yes! Sorry, I love the Helmicrons.
Well, they're coming.
Yeah, Anteater one. Fantastic.
Okay.
Oh, I'm so excited.
Cassie, Anteater, Helmicrons.
There's one that, well, we'll get to it
more. Yeah, you, us. We'll see you there. In the cradle and the silver spoon. Little boy blue and the man on the moon. When you're coming home, Dad, I don't know.